This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Shaka Hislop. A little later on in the show, Julien Laurent will be here to talk about that huge game between Sevilla and Atleti in La Liga. But for now, we welcome in. Nader Manuro is with us, and I know, slightly disappointing for some, Frank Leboeuf has a shirt on as he joins us we kick things off in the Premier League. The big story today, Spurs being rubbish again. They could only manage a 2-2 draw away against Newcastle. They were 2-1 up for going into the latter stages of this game. Newcastle, though, getting the equaliser and thoroughly deserving of it as well. Nadem, Spurs, considering they've still got something to play for, they still could get into the top four, especially with Chelsea dropping points yesterday. But again, they just fall short.
Yeah, they really did. And to be honest, I think we need to give credit to Newcastle. The fact that they were 2-1 down, they pushed and they pushed and they pushed. And overall, their football's been criticised a lot recently. But I thought they did well in this game and they took it to Spurs. And the Spurs side at the moment, it seems like one day they look a good side, the next day they look distinctly average. And I think it's a big blow for them, because going into the game, knowing that you could be in the top four by the close of play should have been a big motive, as Frank would say. But unfortunately for them, you know, they essentially didn't show up on such a big occasion. But I think it kind of shows, between now and the end of the season, these games against teams who are down at the bottom are going to be tougher than a lot of people realise, because it's desperate times down there and they need to get as many points as possible. So don't expect to get anything if you're not at your best. And Spurs today, in some ways, they're lucky that they came away with a point.
Yeah.
And that's a crazy thing to say, considering, as I say, they had such a big opportunity to go in the top four.
Yeah, that's the nuts thing, isn't it, Frank? As much as you want to credit Newcastle, good fighting spirit after what has been a horrible few months for them, for Tottenham Hotspur to be in a situation where they've very much got a chance to go into the Champions League, and this is the first time we've seen it this season, then conceding late in these sort of matches, it's embarrassing, isn't it?
It is, but they're not the only one, because we're going to talk about Chelsea also, and with so many other clubs that they have an opportunity and they miss it, and it seems to be to become an average team. Yeah. At the same time, showing that the other team is becoming a great team. There is no consistency during this season for most teams, or maybe most of them, except maybe Manchester City and a little bit Manchester United. But otherwise, it's ups and downs for most teams. And it's funny that, because Tottenham, we weren't very happy with the way they were playing, very defensively at the beginning of the season, but they were sticking to each other, they were working hard to each other, they were consistent in the way we didn't want to see them playing, but at the end of the day, they were having results and they were consistent. When they started to play offensively, they lost all those things. It became individuals were making the difference, and it happened today with Kane, and I will add Ndombele and Højbjerg today, and a little bit of Lloris as well. But otherwise, the other players looked so poor.
Yeah.
Davinson Sanchez, it was like he lost his football. And a little bit of this, a little bit of that, makes an average performance with a very poor result at the end of the day.
So far behind where they should be.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. As much as you want to credit Newcastle for showing good fighting spirit, I think that phrase almost suggests that Newcastle only started to play or take chances once they found themselves down. I thought Newcastle was the better of the two teams pretty much from the opening whistle. Gale should have had an open header, which he totally whiffed at, then brought a good save out of Lloris. This is before Newcastle even scored. And then Spurs equalised straight after through a Newcastle mistake. And as this game progressed, and I watched this game, the thing for me that stood out is, despite Spurs having by far the better players individually, I thought this game was all about Newcastle. At times making mistakes defensively, that's a defence that has a mistake in them, and you saw that. And then going forward, I also felt that a lot of the times the strikers got in each other's way. So when they had good opportunities, they ended up being their own worst enemy. And this is a team that very well could have been in the bottom three come the end of the weekend if results went that way. And now you take all that into consideration. Spurs players, Newcastle dominating from pretty much the opening whistle all the way through to the end. These two sharing the spoils. And you sit back and you have to ask yourself, did this Steve Bruce just out-coach Jose Mourinho? Which, in a sentence, seems absolutely ridiculous to be even considering. But it's the truth. Spurs was just simply that poor. They were fortunate to get a point.
Interesting stuff from Jose Mourinho after the game, Nadim, and I just want to get the psyche. If you were in that Tottenham locker room and you heard your coach when asked, in the past you've been so good at closing out games, what's changed? And he said, same coach, different players.
He certainly has a way with words. And again, I think every time Jose Mourinho speaks out in the open, I think as a player, you have to ask yourself, is what he's saying correct or not? I think if he's leveling a criticism at somebody and it is correct, the player essentially doesn't have any leg to stand on. But in some cases, you know, a player is very rarely going to criticise the coach, but the coach always seems to get the chance to criticise the player, and that is going to hurt your pride. But I think the Spurs players know themselves that what they've been putting out there this season essentially hasn't been acceptable. Even today, to take a 2-1 lead when you're not playing well, you still expect them to close the game out. So I think it's right to be criticised, but I just don't
think it hasn't made a difference.
Jose Mourinho
after the Europa League debacle, after they got knocked out there, he threw everyone under the bus, didn't make any sort of improvement, happened again today. What he's doing isn't galvanizing the side, isn't making them any better. So surely he's got to change his tact.
Not necessarily, no. Because I think going into the next games, it puts more pressure on the players. And I think for some of these players, with their pride, at some point they will step up. I think they know that in 2-3 weeks' time, there's a League Cup final, and the pressure's going to be really on for them. Because if they don't do well in that, you know, they're relying on, like, what have they got for the rest of the season? You know, there's a big sense of, you know, pressure. And Jose's adding to that, hoping that that's going to spark something within his team. And he could do the opposite and say nothing and just accept it. But then with those players there, maybe that's when they'll just roll over. But if they get people that roll their sleeves up, then maybe in the future they'll be all right. Because let's be very, very clear. For as disappointing as they've been this season, they could have been in the top four but today, at this moment in time. So clearly, for as bad as it's been, it hasn't actually been tragic.
It's top four of a rubbish league. Everyone has got problems, Nathan. Everyone's got problems at the moment. You look at everyone around. Chelsea lost out to West Brom.
Yeah, exactly. But like I said in my piece before, playing against a team like Newcastle, playing against a team like Fulham, Brighton and so on, these are tough games at this part of the season because those teams there, they know that they're running out of opportunities to climb up the table. So with that in mind, Spurs had this game will probably be harder for Spurs than if they played, say, Crystal Palace, who were higher up in the table. I guarantee it. But for Spurs, Mourinho spoken, it's not new for him to criticise his players. So how are they going to react? They've got another chance probably midweek and they've got a cup final in 3 weeks' time.
Frank, how would you react? Mourinho coming out and saying, look, I'm brilliant, my players are rubbish, nothing to do with me.
Yeah, but no wonder why he doesn't stay too long in every club he's been to, because players are going to start hating him. And that's the reason why, you know, he doesn't stay long. What the players, because they have an ego and not maybe as high as Mourinho's ego, but they have an ego. And they say, okay, we're going to show to that beep that we are better than he thinks. And we're going to make sure that he's going to go away after that. So I'm sure the Tottenham players, they're going to go for it. They're going to try to win the League Cup. But some players are going to speak out. And he's going to say, we don't want to stay with him. We don't want somebody who just trash us and thinks he's the best in the world. We don't want to work with those kind of people. And that's the maybe Mourinho's problem, issues, since he's been a coach. And he stayed, 2-3 years most? That's what it is.
Thanks for self-censoring there, Frank. We appreciate that. Everyone at Disney, ESPN, very appreciative. Kane's got to go, any shot? Getting 2 goals again today.
Yeah, if you're Harry Kane, the only thing that's keeping you there is a sense of loyalty to the club.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with...
If you're a Spurs fan, can you really blame him?
No, you can't. Listen, you applaud players when they show their sense of loyalty to a club, for whatever reason, because it's so rare in today's game. But truth be told, if you're Harry Kane and you're looking at Spurs objectively and you are trying to decide where my career goes from here, where do I find silverware? There is nothing at the club right now that says you're on course to deliver silverware in any manner, or significant silverware in any manner. You don't see this Spurs team being on course to win the Premier League anytime soon. I know Spurs got to a Champions League final a couple of seasons ago, but that right now seems by far the exception more than the rule. You don't see it happening again. So if you're Harry Kane, in this climate of there are very few world-class strikers, very few available. You don't see Robert Lewandowski going anywhere. Erling Haaland, you're talking about 200 million. Mm. And then there's Harry Kane. Does your sense of loyalty really keep you at Spurs much longer? Objectively, and I'm not a Spurs fan, I don't see it.
As we mentioned before, of course, Spurs missing the opportunity to move up to fourth after the debacle at Stamford Bridge for Chelsea. Just taking a look at how things stand. Regarding the odds to finish in the top four, United we find, we'll talk about their win against Brighton a little later on. Leicester, you feel, should be OK. But everyone now is just almost falling over themselves. And according to the bookies, it will be Liverpool who will make it into that fourth spot ahead of Chelsea, West Ham and Spurs. Nadim, do you agree with that?
I can see it, to be honest. I can see it. I think some of the troubles which they've had, they feel like they're a bit of a distance away now. Looking at the way they played against Arsenal, just I think it was yesterday, I thought they looked really good. And that obviously was with the makeshift centre-back partnership, but they looked like they were rolling, looked like some people were getting confidence again. And overall, they dominated an Arsenal side, which over the past few months have looked like a tough side to play against. So I think that's a positive sign for them. But like, it's so tough to say, But the question I was going to ask you guys was, when you look at the Spurs team, if you disregard the manager, do you think that Spurs are a team who should be in the top four anyway? But yeah, like I was saying, we talk about Liverpool coming off the back of the seasons which they've had. I think they'll find form and I think they'll do well. But like I just said there, do you think the Spurs squad is a top four squad based on the other team squads as well?
We spent too much time on Spurs, Nathan. We have to move on. looking at that Liverpool lineup fixtures and see what happened at Chelsea, Frank. What went wrong yesterday? It was, of course, his first defeat as coach, and boy, was it a proper defeat.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure about the second yellow card on Thiago Silva. And I don't agree with the ref, but that was his own decision. And it doesn't mean that you have the right to lose 5-2 at home because you play 10 against 11 and you are Chelsea and you play against West Brom. I think it was a horrendous defending from the Chelsea side. A lack of mentality and I didn't like the game they played. You can make a mistake, but on that race for the fourth place, that's the only one and only first and maybe last mistake you can afford if you want to finish in the last four, in the first four, sorry. So they have to react, and they didn't lose for 14 games in a row. So you can accept one deficiency, but that's the only one. They really have to react.
It would still be an incredible escape for West Brom, wouldn't it, if they were to avoid a relegation. But results very much going Newcastle's way today, managing to get that draw against Manchester United. Brighton, meanwhile, at the moment, are safe, but of course losing against Manchester United today by 2-1. Brighton with the lead, United though coming back. Greenwood with the winner late on. Nadim, we've said this about United quite a lot this season, not particularly pretty, but they do show grit. They do show the act to find something deep down when needed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think if it wasn't a season like Manchester City are having right now, there would be a true title race on, because I think after they scored that second goal, I heard the stat, I think they've lost one game out of the last 24, which is exceptional, but it still is a distant second to what City are doing, because City are ultimately winning more games. And that's Manchester United, really. You know, they find ways to win games. It's never truly glamorous. But they do keep winning, they do keep winning, do keep winning. And obviously this race to try and win the title seems like it's long gone, but you can still try and find some level of form. I think they have Getafe on Thursday. And if they finish the season maybe winning Europa League, they can feel positive. But you know, Manchester United, they should be involved in title races, and maybe in the future they will be. But this run that they're on now, for as much as it, as I say, hasn't always been pleasing on the eye, it does show a level of steel which maybe they haven't had for a few years now. And that's only going to stand them in good stead, in my opinion.
Penalty or no penalty, Shant? That was a big talking point.
I thought it was.
You thought it was?
I thought it was. I think, with all question, Welbeck gets the position on McTominay. And I think when, as a striker, when you have position, you also have the benefits that you don't. So, for instance, outside of the box, you always tell strikers, run across the defender, because the onus then becomes on the defender to avoid that contact. Otherwise, you get, it'll be a free kick, it might be a sending off, etc., etc. In this instance, that close to goal, I think Welbeck has the position in McTominay.
Maguire, excuse me,
and now the onus is on him to avoid that contact, which he doesn't. I think he leans into to Welbeck slightly, and as a result, once he catches the ankle, which puts Welbeck off, it had to be a penalty for me.
Frank?
Good explanation from Xhaka, but I won't agree with him. It's not because you slightly touch a player that's automatically you deserve a penalty against you. I think Welbeck misses the ball. He has the ball in his foot and he misses it. We see Maguire putting his hand on Welbeck's shoulder, but it doesn't mean that because of that, Welbeck missed the ball.
I think Maguire clips Welbeck's ankle, and that forces Welbeck to almost kick into the floor. It's not about the shoulder on the hand on the shoulder. It's about the clip on the ankle, and that's what causes Welbeck to miss the ball.
Well, I didn't see that. I saw the replay, and it didn't click on me. For me, it wasn't obvious. And it's really the interpretation of the... We've seen a penalty for less than that, and I agree with you. And it could have been a penalty, and I wouldn't have said it's a scandal. But for me, as a former defender, I would say that Maguire doesn't really touch well, doesn't touch enough Welbeck, and I see Welbeck having the ball.
Right.
And for me, it was more Welbeck missing the ball than Maguire, you're pushing him to miss the ball.
You have the deciding vote, Nadim.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide if I'm Team Frank or if I'm Team Xhaka, as is the case with all the viewers. It's like it's a really, really tough call. I kind of agree with elements here, because I think Maguire maybe has touched him, but I still believe that Danny Welbeck could have scored. And I think the fact that he's missed the ball... I think he knows that he should have scored that, whatever the contact situation was, and he's cried for the penalty as a secondary thing. So I can see why it wasn't given, but then in the same breath, Maguire is so lucky to be on the wrong side of your defender, to maybe touch him and then for him to miss the ball and not give the penalty against you. Those are all the stars shining at the same time. So I if they gave the penalty, I wouldn't have complained. But then in the same breath, the ref said it's no pen, so I guess VAR probably didn't have enough to overturn it.
Just taking a look then at what all that means. The bottom of the table, Sheffield United, of course, are done. West Brom, despite that win against Chelsea, also done. For Fulham as well, losing today against Aston Villa, that puts them in a lot of trouble. 3 points off Newcastle. Newcastle also with a game in hand. Well, just a reminder, Extra Time is always available over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go and check it out. Good news today, 8,000 fans will be allowed at Wembley for the Carabao Cup final. Of course, it's a match you can see live on ESPN Plus. Manchester City against Spurs. Coverage of that match starts at 11:30 Eastern. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast.
Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Big result in Spain today. Sevilla beating Atletico Madrid by 1-0. The perfect result for both Barcelona and Real Madrid, and has blown the title race wide open. Don't forget, at the end of July, Atleti were 10 points clear at the top of the table with a game in hand. If Barcelona win tomorrow, that is down to just 1 point. In this extraordinary turnaround of events, Jules, I know you're keeping an eye on this game. Sevilla thoroughly deserving of the win.
Yeah, I thought totally. At least they looked like a team that knew exactly what to do tactically, a team that was coached. And on the other hand, you had an Atletico Madrid team that were all over the place. I thought it was an absolute mess. It looked like players were not really sure what to do, how they were playing, what the formation was. Simeone changed pretty much everything when Renan Lodi came off after just half an hour. The substitution in the second half, taking off Thomas Lemar, an attacking player, when you're still nil-nil in a game that you can't... Well, you can draw it, I guess. You can take a point, but you could have tried to go on and win it. And you replace him by Geoffrey Condovia, who is a pure defensive midfielder. Made no sense whatsoever to me. And in the end, Sevilla got the goal they deserved. Really well-worked goal as well. And Jesus Navas crossed for Acuna, right back to left back. And that was the kind of thing that we didn't see Atleti doing whatsoever in the whole 90 minutes, even if Angel Correa had a big chance to level the game right at the end.
Jules, we've seen it time and time again this season. In these big matches, Atleti continue to get it wrong. And that's what's going to kill them at the end of the season. I don't think they're going to win La Liga now.
Well, they've got the Clásico that they're going to watch next weekend, hoping that it's a draw between Real Madrid and Barcelona, and then they can go and beat Betis and then try to get that margin a bit higher up at the top, because if there's a winner in the Clásico and they don't get 3 points against Betis, then they're in huge trouble. And I think with that team, though, if they get behind one of the two others, then I don't think they will come back, because they clearly have lost a lot of confidence. I think they've lost confidence in themselves, and we saw that at Chelsea, for example, in the Champions League, where they were really below par in both legs. But I wonder if they've lost confidence with Simeone, because as you said, again, his tactics were wrong. His decision-making during the game were wrong again. And you really wonder if you Luis Suarez or Koke or Saúl Ñíguez, how are you feeling about your own managers getting wrong every single time in those big games?
And think, all the naughty, bad thing you've said about Ronald Koeman, and he could lead Barcelona to win La Liga, Jules.
And you know what? I would love Diego Simeone to find a solution to the problem that he's having right now. A change of tactics like Koeman did. Koeman, it was not working, let's be honest. We were right to criticize him because he was not good enough. But that change of formation, going three at the back with Frankie de Jong in that sort of hybrid position, half a midfielder, half a centre-back, having Dembele as a more central striker, really. Messi in that free role. That worked perfectly. The two wing-backs in Alba and Dest. Perfect. And well done to Koeman for that, and now we don't criticize him anymore. But you're right, he could go and win this one, which would be an incredible achievement after how bad they were up to, what, December, really. But for Simeone, he needs a sort of Koeman Eureka moment where, hang on a minute, this is what we should do and things will improve and get better. But I'm not sure Simeone right now has that in him, though.
Away from that game, unfortunately, we've got to cover as well what happened between Cadiz and Valencia. Diakabi says he was racially abused half an hour into this game, told his teammates they all walked off together. The game was then stopped for a moment. And this is what Jose Gaya, the Valencia defender, had to say what happened during that time. He said, Diakabi told us he heard a racist insult, so we all went off the pitch. We were told that we had to play because if we didn't, they would take the 3 points off us and maybe we'd be docked more points. Diaby's asked us to play on. We wouldn't have done so if he hadn't done so. He said he wasn't in the right state of mind to keep playing. He's devastated. There's a lot to unpick here. The Spanish FA are coming out and saying that nobody actually said, look, this is what's going to happen. You're going to have 3 points deducted. They just suggested this was the protocol.
The saddest thing, surely, Shaka, in all of this is Dirk Arby in the stands watching the game.
Heartbroken to see Valencia drop points in the manner that they do. First of all, whenever we talk about these incidents, I like to talk about the most positive takeaway from what you saw today, if you can find one. And that is Valencia standing by their teammate. As a black player in that dressing room, and you see the rest of the team take the field in support of you in that moment and in that manner, I think it encourages and empowers not just you, but that entire dressing room. And my hope is that, my belief is that Valencia are a stronger unit as a result of it. But then it shows the challenge with dealing with on-field racism in an environment where 100% of the proof is on the victim. You have to somehow prove that you've been racially abused without there being the merest shred of a denial. Let's take the Rangers incident with Slavia Prague recently. There was a witness. Another of the Rangers players heard the abuse. He will report it. And while UEFA will investigate, there will always be that, there will be that continued doubt of, because it's your teammate. and that is ridiculous nature of this scenario here. That the abuser will always get away with it because of that. To Gaia's point, or maybe to the Spanish FA's point, that this is the protocol, there is supposed to be protocol about how you deal with racist abuse and what players are supposed to do and what teams are supposed to do. So to have word, formally or informally, sent to Valencia saying, listen, if you don't come out, it's going to be more than 3 points, again, kind of goes against all the discussions that we've been having around this issue for quite some time and the responsibilities of the FA, of the league, of the Spanish FA, of UEFA, of FIFA. And we are still having these same roundabout discussions, and ultimately, it's those who are abused are bearing the brunt.
And it seems to be the person who's abused, then it's all up to him what happens next, which seems a strange situation to be in, considering you've just gone through all that emotional stress. Surely there needs to be a protocol. If this happens,
exactly,
X, Y, and Z. But the question is, what should X, Y, and Z be?
Exactly. And this is where I think the game has let itself down for so long, because 101% of the burden of proof is on the victim. On the other side of the coin, being a black player, or an ex-black player myself, I am yet to meet a single black player who will accuse another professional of racial abuse without him being absolutely certain. I am yet to meet any professional who will walk off a field before the end of the game if they don't feel it's warranted. You have seen professionals stay on the field at 9, 10, 15 nil and see that game out. I am yet to see a professional decide that, you know what, I don't like how this game is going 30 minutes in. I'm going to make up some kind of false accusation against somebody else and force everybody off the field. I just find it a ridiculous position to still be in, to still be discussing and make no real effort at addressing the issue in 2021.
Shaka, thank you very much. Just a reminder that there's plenty of content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go there and subscribe.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
No doubt where the big story in France was this weekend, PSG losing 1-0 against Lille, meaning that Lille 3 points clear at the top of the table. Jules, what happened?
A lot of bad things and, well, a lot of good things if you look at it from the Lille's point of view. They were very good tactically, they were well organised, they scored on their only shot on target for most of the game, but they were very efficient in everything they did. And on the other hand, for PSG, there was a lot of bad things. Too predictable, the way they played with the ball, not enough intensity. Neymar was back, but as we said before, really short in terms of match fitness because he hadn't played for 2 months. And we saw it because when he's short of match fitness, he struggles, the team becomes too predictable because every time the ball goes to Neymar, but he can't really make a difference because he's short of match fitness. And then when you miss the chances that they hold so hard at 0-0 or 1-0 down, then it gives you another defeat. It's many defeats now for Pochettino. It's a lot of defeats for PSG this season. And they don't really have their destiny in their own hands now because they're 3 points behind Lille with, what, 7 games to go.
Frank, once again, Neymar grabbing the headlines for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, exactly. I can understand what Jules says, you know, in the way that his fitness is not at the top. It doesn't mean that you have to misbehave. You have to realize that players, they're gonna look for you because they know that you're gonna react. And that guy is not learning fast enough. I think, I don't know if he's gonna learn one day. And you can see it, you know, every time that he has players who's coming to tease him, he's going to react immediately. I would have loved to play against him because every time I play against him, they're going to finish 10 against 11. It's too easy. And he's a top player. He has the talent that he has, but that problem, he got so many yellow cards. And even Pepe, the former Real Madrid players, has less yellow card and red card than him. It's impossible to have a career like that. And you just come back. You make two stupid mistakes. You get 2 yellow cards, red card, you lose. So you don't get your fitness back for the game on Wednesday. That guy is just a spoiled brat. You know, he doesn't show that he's a grown up. And he wants everybody to take care of him because he's a talent. It doesn't work that way. You have to prove your talent. You have to prove that you respect everybody and you respect the football. And he doesn't.
He's 29, Jules.
Yeah, time is running out, that's for sure. And listen, Frank is right, of course. It's too many red cards now to the point that he got sent off for 2 yellows. So the first yellow could have been a red when he pushed Benjamin André, the Lille captain, in the face. That was very kind from the referee, I think, to only give a yellow. Then he gets the second yellow. The argument with Thiago Giallo continues into the tunnel, the dressing room. They have to be separated, etc. But the problem is there's been too many red cards this season. So what should be just a one-match ban at the weekend against Strasbourg could easily become now, because he had some suspended games that he would have been banned for before, a 2 or 3 match ban, which, again, for PSG is a disaster. For him, for fitness-wise, is a disaster because there's the 2 Bayern games coming where he will play, but he's so out of fitness that I'm not sure how much he will have an influence on those games where really he should be the star and the leader for PSG. So it was a dramatic afternoon, really.
We'll talk about the Bayern game in a moment, Jules. Just regarding their reports that there's contract talks have been halted by his team.
Yeah, we're not really sure. I mean, PSG are still saying it's all agreed and they're just waiting for the right timing to announce it. The problem is he's been injured, so you don't really want to do it that way. Now he's got that red card, it's hard to announce something like this now. And maybe there are maybe question marks on his side, maybe, I don't know, on PSG's side, things that we don't really know or that we're not briefed yet over why those contract negotiations who were so... It was done. That's what we were told, but we go back 4 or 6 weeks ago and still hasn't been announced. Nothing has been announced. So maybe there's actually, you're right, an issue somewhere, whether that's on the club part or on his part, that is the reason why they haven't announced it yet.
Of course, as you mentioned, for PSG, next up is the Champions League against the defending champions, Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich 6-4 on. Jules, if it's me, I'm putting my house on Bayern Munich. I can't see, and I haven't seen enough from PSG this season to suggest that they can get anything out of these two legs.
And you would be right, I guess. But if he's the PSG from the first leg in Barcelona, or even the game against Lyon, which was maybe the best game of the season, with that intensity, the high press, the counter press, very effective in both boxes. Kylian Mbappe at his best, who again is clinical more than he was on at the weekend. Then they have a chance. Bayern don't have Lewandowski, PSG don't have Verratti. Maybe losing Verratti is bigger than Bayern losing Lewandowski, but this game would be won in midfield. Goretzka and Kimmich against Danilo and Gay, I guess, but PSG will have to have two games almost perfect if they want to go through. It's not impossible, of course, but they will have to play far much better than what we saw on Saturday.
We know they have to play better, Frank. We know they have to do it over the two legs. The big question is, can they? Have they got the character? Have they got it within them to put in two big performances against one of Europe's best?
They were capable of being great against Lyon and the first leg game against Barcelona because of two reasons. Because they played together, because they fought together, and because Verratti was in the middle of the park. Verratti won't be there on Wednesday, and I'm not sure with what they showed against Lille, they're capable of being able to fight together. And I would be Pochettino. I wouldn't put Neymar in the first 11, because he's out of shape, because he's going to create trouble, because he's not going to work defensively. And you cannot play with four offensive players against Munich away from home. It's impossible. And the first choice of the four that you have at front, for me, would be obviously Neymar to be put out, because he's not ready.
Do you agree, Jules?
It won't happen, but yeah, if you just look at match fitness, of course, Moise Kean, despite having COVID not long ago, Angel Di Maria and Kylian Mbappe are far fitter, fitness, you know, for match fitness, more than Neymar. Neymar is the most talented of them four, and you can't not play him for a game like this because he can play. But it's, I don't know what Pochettino can do. Should you move to a 4-3-3 and maybe drop Moise Kean and play Mbappe central, who can run in behind that high line from Bayern Munich, and have three in midfield, then that you don't have Verratti, but three quite defensive midfielder for that first leg to be against Kimmich and Goretzka? I think, for me, that's what I would do. I think Pochettino is very tempted of changing his formation to go with the 4-3-3 to be more solid in midfield and use the pace of Mbappe centrally and not how wide like he would normally do.
Jules, what's Pochettino done since he's arrived?
I'm sorry, Dan. I don't know. I just wonder why Pochettino came. If it was to babysit Neymar and the rest of the squad, because it's obvious to everybody. I live in Paris. I talk to many Paris Saint-Germain fans, and they're fed up with Neymar. They really question to see if Pochettino is a real leader. You know, because he's out of shape. Because they play Bayern Munich. They don't play Lille, they don't play Barcelona, they play Bayern Munich, the defending Champions League champion. They're going to play because he's just talented, and we all know that it's not enough to be only talented. Because he's the most paid player, he has to play. I'm talking about Neymar. I don't know why. If I'm a coach, I will have a discussion with Neymar. Listen to me, man. You're not ready. You're out of shape. I want to go through. I want to win against Bayern Munich, and I don't think you're ready for that. So I'm sorry, you're going to be on the bench. You are coach or you're babysitter? I just want to know.
But then how do we see those above Pochettino react to that decision, Jules?
Yeah, that's right. And listen, this is what happens. Spurs qualified for the Champions League final in 2019 without Harry Kane. He's not fit. He starts the final. He's your best player. He starts the final and you bench Lucas Moura, who just scored you a hat-trick in the semi-final second leg to get you to the final. This is what happens in football. Your best player, whether he's fully fit, fully match fit or not, will play. This is a babysitter or not babysitter, manager or not manager. Everybody will do it. And I think Pochettino will do it again. And you're right, Dan. There's of course a question mark of how Qatar would react if Neymar, who could play, who is fit to play, not much fit, but fit to play, was left on the bench by Pochettino. I'm not sure they would like that at all.
A lot more, of course, from Jules on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which drops on Monday. So much for them to discuss. Be sure to download it.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. But be sure to stay tuned for Extra Time, where we'll be discussing, amongst other things, that photo that Mr. LaBeouf posted on Instagram. Stay tuned. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. One subject has very much dominated a lot of questions that we've received today. Shaq with me in the studio. Nadim is with us, as is Frank LaBeouf, who posted quite the picture on Instagram. Look at that, ladies and gentlemen. Frank, just give us some insight into this picture. Where is it? Are you wearing anything below the picture line?
Why?
okay, that was at the gym.
Yes.
Yesterday, and it was after the gym, in fact, in the dressing room, and I was wearing shorts,
right,
underneath, and that's my hand taking a picture, in case you were wondering, and that's...
We weren't, and, to be honest.
I love the shade of the picture and the body.
Yes.
And just saying that if you keep on working out, you can have results.
Right.
That's really good.
Oh, that's good. Nadim, are you going to follow suit this week?
Absolutely not, no. No, it's not for me, to be honest. But credit to you, Frank. When I get to your age, if I look like that, maybe I'll post. But for now, I'm just going to keep it under this red top.
We got to see Stevie do that. Good. That'd be good.
I'll take some lighting.
That would be quite light. Jackie, you're the same age as Frank? How does that make you feel?
Old, given that Nadim just said, when I get to your age, goodness me.
Nadim, what's the locker room like when players start tuning out their manager? Does training and meetings feel different, like you're just going through the motions? Surely this must be happening at Spurs with Mourinho.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Like, you can't escape it. Once one or two people might have a bit of dissent, but it tends to be people who aren't playing. But when the people who are playing start to lose a bit of trust in the manager, you start to see it. It doesn't feel the same when you arrive. You're being told to do tactics, doesn't feel the same. You go out to a game, things aren't going well, you don't have the trust that the manager's going to do something to change it, and you feel like it's the players almost versus the management. And when that's the case, things never seem to go well and they don't last for very long. So as far as Spurs go now, I think they're lucky to have the talent that they have because they can still win something. But if the talent was less, then I imagine this season would be a complete write-off.
Nadim, I was listening to an interview with Joey Barton talking about his time at QPR and how much he hated Mark Hughes. You must have been there at that time. What was that dynamic like?
To be honest, it's great that he said that, because in that same breath when he was at QPR, I hated Joey Barton, so it was all the same thing, really. Like, as far as it went, he's a very unique human being. And I stress unique. In fact, we'll call him Marmite. And I really don't like Marmite, but some people do.
Wow.
So as far as that goes, he had his own ideas and he would suggest things, do certain things. And it wasn't always a popular thing or a popular person. And he was entitled to dislike whoever he wants. But like I say, in the same breath, you know, Mark Hughes was doing the best that he could. And as far as personality goes, there wasn't that much reason to hate him in that time. Tactically or whatever, you could have had your issues, but that's Joey Barton, you know. He's managing now, and I'm sure he's got he's finally starting to understand that maybe it's a bit trickier to pass on a message to 25 players as opposed to be the one player who sometimes criticizes the manager for pretty much every single day in training for a whole season.
Wow, because Nathan, they were talking about him getting sent off in the big game against Manchester City, and they were saying that he just went straight to the back of the bus, basically, didn't interact with anyone because he didn't want to celebrate mediocrity. He didn't want to celebrate surviving relegation. Then he almost got into a fight with Sami Nasri. Sounds like a lovely evening.
These are the things you like, which are hard to understand about him, because he does have those lofty ambitions, but the fact is he was playing for QPR, and in that last game of the season we were playing to stay up, and when you do stay up, people would lose their jobs if they went down, not just players but staff, cleaners, people working in the cafeteria, that type of thing. So it mattered for some of those players. They had never played at the highest level before, so even finishing 17th was the highest position they'd ever finished in their careers. So when you think about it, you need to have, I think within football, the more empathy you have, the more you can enjoy and understand what's going on. But he's obviously driven by whatever he's driven by. But the fact of the matter is, he never finished in the top four. I don't think he finished top six, and he's probably been relegated 3-4 times as well. So even though you don't want to celebrate 17th, I bet you didn't celebrate finishing in the bottom three either.
Moving on, should Arteta be sacked, Shaq?
I don't think he will. I think Arteta will at least start next season, and Arsenal rightly hope an improvement, and that's where he'd be judged. But to the point of the question, I thought Arsenal were awful yesterday.
Yeah, really bad again, wasn't it? We've seen that a lot
again
this season.
I was telling you, a good friend of mine is a huge Arsenal fan, and during the game I text him like, if Arsenal play any deeper, they'll be in the Thames. Now I don't know where the Thames is to the stadium.
But not as relevant because it's London.
Well, yeah, so but that was just my, you know, just watching the game, I'm thinking Arsenal not even trying to get out of their half in.
Yeah.
And that speaks volumes when you're a club with those ambitions. Regardless of where you are right now, when you're a club with those ambitions and you're trying to put things in place to maybe make a better run of it next season, and you come up against still defending champions who are having an awful time, and that's how you play, I think rightly asked questions of Arteta, but he'll be given at least the start of next season to answer them.
Nathan, who's the most improved player in the Premier League this season?
Wow. Oh my goodness. I will say
Luke Shaw would be at the
Dominic
top of a lot of people's list, wouldn't it?
No, but he's been at Manchester United for a few years, and obviously he's had his issues, but there was one point when he was very good. But I'd say Dominic Calvert-Lewin, because in years gone by he was never really being spoken about as being a talisman. But this year, when he doesn't play for Everton, I think they're a poorer side. So for that to be the case and for him to be playing for England now, you know, I've got to put him in that conversation.
But Luke Shaw's playing for England as well now, Nathan.
Yeah, and he was doing it before, whereas Calvert-Lewin was not. But Dan, you're a really, really, really interesting guy, and I can't wait to meet you in person one day. I cannot wait.
Sounds a little threatening.
I can't
Can
wait.
Shaq be
it
with me when I
great conversation
you.
Off camera.
Give me answer
no,
this.
No, he will not, he will not be with
Joey
you.
Joey
I cannot wait
Joey,
to meet you.
Joey Barton can come along with you.
My new friend. But the definition of improvement, it doesn't matter if you were good in the past, then rubbish. Like, it's you're judged on how well you were this season compared to last. And Luke Shaw's been a different player, hasn't he?
Okay, so thank you. So, Dan, who do you think is the most improved player in the Premier
John
League
Stones.
This year? Luke Shaw,
I'm
great.
Go for.
John Stones. John Stones is a
Dominic
good shout. Yeah.
Thanks.
Wow, very nice, Shaq.
Only contribution to this.
Frank, would you like to contribute? Also, will you be my friend?
I would love to. I think Luke Shaw is on the right spot. But what about Grealish? What about Mount?
No, Jack Grealish was good last season, no. Frank. Why don't he come to you with that? Right.
Well, no, he became he became better. He improved. Compared, that was a question. Improved, you know, comparing to last year. Whatever.
Nathan. Were you secretly celebrating when Aguero scored the last-minute winner?
No. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. If you look at the video, I put my hands on my head because I thought we were going down in that moment. And for the equal opposite, so they've scored the winner and, you know, they've won the league in the last minute of the season. For us, I thought we were down in the last minute of the season. So I was devastated. But 20 seconds later, when I saw everybody else was celebrating on our bench and with our away fans in the stadium, you know, that's when there was a sense of relief. And to go back to what I said about the Joey Barton thing, nobody was celebrating our dressing room. We were relieved.
Yeah.
The difference between our dressing room and City one, in our one, we had beers. In theirs, they had champagne. So let's just put that into perspective. It was a relief to be staying up in the Premier League. That's the bigger thing.
Frank, do you think that derbies or football rivalries have lost their true edge and fierceness now compared to past derby matches, as opposing players are now hugging and bantering with each other?
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. We could feel the haters around the field. Well, this year is special because you don't have the fans, so you don't have the pressure of the fans on top of it. But it's true that the players don't really care before a game where they don't. We were at the time we didn't talk to each other because we wanted to create that that kind of feeling that we were ready to die for the club we were playing for. And I played the Clásico. I didn't play the derby with Chelsea because the real derby with Chelsea is Fulham, and Fulham was in Championship. But I played against Wimbledon, I played London derbies.
Yeah,
but
Leeds as well, Frank,
I feel
obviously.
That was pretty intense. But you know, the Arsenal-Tottenham, I don't feel the same kind of pressure between the players and the fact that they hate each other and they're going to fight for the fans. And the Manchester derby as well, Liverpool against Manchester, it's not the same. It's really not the same than before, for sure.
I don't know. I think derbies still have real value in the game. I don't think players just brush it off.
Nadim, why have you given me such a short answer?
Because I don't have anything else to say.
Oh, okay.
Nadim? I think it depends on the derby, because say for the North London one, that seems to be based around pretty football, but there are some places where you'll go and play where the quality of football isn't the main thing. Like if you watch a Newcastle versus Sunderland game from times gone by, those games aren't about making 500 passes each. It's about the commitment, and you represent the people and the beliefs of the team. Same for like the Glasgow derby and things like this. There are certain games where when you go to play for the club, the derby is the most important game, and as a player, you can never escape that. Whereas you look at, say, the Manchester derby now, and yes, it's a big game, but it's one chance to get 3 points in a season where you're trying to win a league. But as I say, in some other places, it means everything. And, you know, overall, I think there are still some good derbies worth watching.
Final question brings up your questionable temperament, Nadim. Just saw the video of your fight with Ibrahimovic in MLS. What happened?
Listen, let's be very, very clear. Let's be very, very clear. I just like to post he did on Instagram, so that we're not beefing. It's not a real war. It's nothing going on. Oh. But in that moment, one big difference I found between the MLS and being in England is that obviously there's a level of respect between players, but it doesn't matter how good somebody is. The fact is, if you play against them, it's your team versus theirs. Mm. And he crossed the line, in my opinion, on the pitch that day. And then he tried to come into our dressing room after the locker room after the game, and he tried to basically little boy me. He says, "Have I calmed down yet? Have I calmed down yet?" But I was furious because we just lost the game, and in the nature, it was in the last minute, basically. So I wasn't happy. So I politely asked him to leave the locker room as quickly as possible, and please go to his section. And he had a few words back, and you know, essentially, I tried to put a marker down to show that this is RSL, this is our team. Mm. You don't allow somebody to walk in just because they're a big star, because the fact of the matter is, they're still the opposition. And I think in that moment, he kind of changed the tone for what the club was then, because they understood that, you know, even though, as I say, he's probably the biggest star in the league at that time, it makes no difference, because you've all earned the right to be on the same field as them. So treat yourself with respect and don't be walked all over.
Where does he stand on the Marmite scale?
Oh my goodness gracious me. He's I think you can split him in two. You can look at his footballing achievements, look at his personality, and his footballing achievements are like chocolate. His personality literally is Marmite, and for me, I'm not interested one bit.
Yeah, we don't have Marmite here, do we?
No, we don't.
It's like a yeast extract that they have.
It's the weirdest thing in history. I don't understand how anybody could let that.
Yeah, it's horrible stuff. But there we go. Frank, did you like it when you lived in England?
Did I like who?
Marmite. Did you ever have it?
Never.
Never. Never.
Good. Looks like he had it smeared all over himself in that photo.
Shaka.
Man. What? What? There you go.
Oh, look at that. Fantastic.
Jack has taken this to another level. That is it. Thank you very much. I wonder if they'll leave that in chat.
You
smear it on Frank's body.
You will just see it.
ESPN SC back on your screens tomorrow. Like Marmite, you love us or hate us.